Welcome into the Seminole Rap Podcast here. It's July 24th as we record. You probably listen to the 25th because we drop it to the Monday after. It doesn't matter. I'm your host, Brian Pellerin here. 2 days before FSU football reports for camp. Finally, the exciting time where we could really start actually building towards the football season. The inter-squad practices and I guess the unofficial, I guess it's official preseason now. I've been saying unofficial for so many months. It's what it is, but finally, some guys showing up, putting on jerseys, wearing pads, and getting ready for the year. We have something to talk about, guys. How exciting. It's Brian Pellerin, your host, as I mentioned before, John Marchant, Max Escarpio, the Seminole Rap crew. Happy to actually talk some football. And I think our rundown for the day will start a little FSU focus. Just coming into camp, everyone, I guess at this point, is as healthy as they're going to be the whole year. You know, football puts the wear and tear on every team, and everyone feels good about their team, I presume, except maybe, you know, some of the lower runs in the conference. So we'll talk a little bit about that, where FSU ranks in the conference overall compared to other schools. I don't think we're doing a full power ranking, but more or less who's better than FSU, who's about the same, and who's worse as we feel right now. Of course, that'll change depending on turning ankles and all that over the next couple of months. We'll go back to our ACC commissioner conversation too that we had before about now that he's given his speech on conference realignment, and as I'm sure John is feeling, it was everything we hoped and less. It was a wonderful comment. So we'll get to that later. But I do want to start, like I mentioned, everything starts healthy and fresh, and it's a new year starting on, I guess, Tuesday or Wednesday for the start of camp. So I want to look first at FSU specifically and kind of strengths, weaknesses, where we feel great. If you haven't already checked them out, there's a lot of position previews that we've been putting out all throughout the summer. There's a lot of them already out, some still coming up this week. I was just working on defensive line one earlier today, which is actually a perfect transition because, John, I'll come to you first, man. If you're looking for strengths on this team, where do you feel confident? And I feel like D-line's got to be one of them.
Absolutely. I think the defense is going to be in good shape. A lot of people thought that they're talking about this defense being one of the best in the ACC. I'm not quite sure yet. I want to see it. The secondary for the last couple of years has been kind of less than some of their parts, I felt like, right? They've had some good players, some talent on there, but they haven't really, I don't know, it's just not what, as a unit, what you kind of want to see. I don't put that on Adam Fuller, stuff like that. I think that this team, we found out, was not nearly as talented as some people had thought it might be. And then on the offensive side, I think running back solid. I think the offensive line is now solidly at least middle of the ACC pack, right? They're not bad anymore. Come a long, long way from those years with Cam Akers. Unfortunately, you know, he had to play against behind a horrible offensive line, but
doing everything he can to get to the line of scrimmage.
Right. And juke six guys. And I think Jordan Travis, we know what he is and that he's solid. So I think the running game again with Mike Norvell and the way that the talent is built on offense, even though the running game is going to be really good, you're going to get 200, 250 yards rushing every single game, pretty much. Unless someone sells out to stop you, it's the passing game I'm still worried about. And again, on defense, I think they're going to be pretty solid. We'll see what their exact strengths or weaknesses are, but I do think they're going to have a pretty solid defensive line. It's not going to be, I think they're going to take a step back from last year. Losing some of the guys that they lost to the NFL or whatever, but they'll still be good.
Yeah. I guess when I wrote the preview, it actually drops on Tuesday, but if you listen here, congrats, you get a preview because it's fresh in my mind. I felt like they were really almost top heavy when I kind of wrote it. I felt like they've got four guys that, well, I guess you don't know what Jared Verse is yet, but it seems like he checks the boxes that are there. I felt like you've got four guys you feel really, really good about. And then I didn't really know how to feel about what was behind them. Just looking at the reps they've had, the playing time they've had, I don't know where to feel there. But I mean, when you look at this roster, like we've talked about plenty of times, when you're rebuilding, the depth isn't just going to always be there. That seems to be many of the positions, and it could just be the nature of college football at this point with transfer portal and what comes with that, where guys, if they don't get their job, you know, maybe they look around. I mean, that's just kind of the nature of depth and things. But obviously coming off of ACC kickoff, the big guy was Jordan Travis, and I guess his first year where you know he's the starter. Max, how much do you think that helps. And I assume that then makes that position a strength where you're really not worried and maybe your worry is somewhere else.
Yeah, well, he's grown a relationship with Norville throughout the offseason. Now he has Tokars. He had Dillingham last year. So he's thrown comfortable with these people now. And it's not a season where he's going in and saying, like last season it was with Mackenzie Milton before he had to compete for his job. This season he's not competing for his job. He's not competing for his starting role. He can't be on the injury list anymore. He just needs to be on the field. But he's not competing for anything. And I think he has a great bond with these coaches now. So we'll see what he can do with that.
Where else do you see the strengths on the team? Where else do you maybe look and go, ooh, that's going to be that could be a problem?
Well, we were talking about the defensive line, and you talked about that you were doing the preview. I was actually doing the preview for the linebackers, and there's some strength in the linebackers room, and there's still some questions to be answered there. Kalen DeLoach had a great season last year. He's probably going to be one of the leaders there. Another dark horse that's going to be there is Tatum Bethune. We didn't get to see him in the spring game, so we don't know really how he's going to fit in, what he's going to do yet. We saw him in practice. He's a player that he has strengths not only in pass coverage but in run stop. He's a good vet. He's a good leader, so we'll see what he can do. And two players that we needed him to step up are, in my opinion, Amari Gaynor and DJ Lundy. We need to see what they can do, and we need them to be more consistent next year. Sometimes they shine. DJ Lundy shined against, I think it was Florida last year at the end of the season, so we need them to be more consistent. And we'll see what that linebacking room can do.
And we always seem to go back to the same phrase, pass catchers. Hopefully one of these transfers hits. Hopefully someone else grows up, right? I mean, is there anyone, Max, maybe that you think is someone to watch maybe in camp?
I'd say Micah Pittman. I mean, they were working a lot with him in spring ball. I mean, we talked a lot about Johnny Wilson. He tweaked his ankle in camp. He had like sometimes
spring camp, right?
Yeah, sometimes he would do good, sometimes he wouldn't, sometimes he would have a big play, and then sometimes he would have a way smaller corner on him, still couldn't do anything. And I was one that was like really hyped to see what he can do. I would look towards Micah Pittman. I would definitely look towards Malik McClain. I think he's going to have a big year. I think he's bound for not a crazy breakout year, but he's going to keep climbing that ladder because I think he's going to be a great player. Another player, Joshua Burrow, he was injured last season, so we'll see what he can do.
I think you said John's two favorite words on the Florida State Seminoles roster was Malik McClain, right?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of McClain. I think he could be a good player. I don't know if he's going to be number one. I don't know if this – again, I mean, wide receiver is easily the worst position group on the team last year. So,
Yeah, easily.
I'm looking for something, but I'm not holding my breath. I think, again, it'll be a little bit more one-dimensional than we would want them to be. But I do think they're going to be better than last year.
Yeah, I guess the one thing there, right, is how much it sounds offensive, but how much worse could they be? You know, it felt like last year whenever they had the shot at a big play, it just hit a guy in the hands and, you know, roll off the field. You're like, well, great, that was a 70-yard touchdown.
Seems like they have some options this year, though.
Yeah.
Douglas, Keyshawn Helton. They have a bunch of Malik McClain, Joshua Burrow. Like, they have answers to, like, whatever you want to do, you have different people. They just have to show up and they'd have to be ready for it.
I 100% agree with that. I think they have a lot of different kind of styles of guys.
Yeah.
Portier. He's got that kind of big frame or whatever. You know, he can catch those comebacks and things outside. I agree with you. They have kind of every kind of different skill set you want, but I think it's a make or break year for Dugans, right? We've seen some of that development across the rest of the roster, though, right? And all these other position groups, they're starting to develop in ways we hadn't seen since near the end of the Jimbo era. But we haven't seen that from the wide receivers. Again, there is a talent issue, I'm not going to lie. Even McClain, some of these guys have been in the program for 3 years now, right? Even maybe four. It's time. It's time that we see something. If we don't, it's Norvell's job, right? I mean, he's probably going to have to fire assistants, you know, to save himself. We'll see. I'm getting ahead of myself. But I'm just saying.
John loves to run to the fire Norvell conversation, but he always does it in like the, here's what we need to do before we do that. Just make sure we don't just go crazy. Mm-hmm. Don't fire him. That's John's favorite. I do think what you made a good point too, John, on the, almost the same vein as the offensive line, just not being terrible. Just be okay because you've got Jordan Travis, who can take okay and make it extraordinary. And, you know, you talked about the running backs. It's there's a lot of guys. So if you just have the offensive line give you okay, you're in a good spot.
Yeah, I look, I'm really excited about the future of this offensive line. I think they've recruited some really good talent. Either they're going to realize that potential under Norvell, or if he gets fired, the next coach is going to reap those benefits of what they're building here. Are they there yet? No, but I feel like they're on the trajectory to being one of the better offensive line units in the conference. They're just not there yet, but they've come a really long way from 2018, 2016, things like that. So I hope Norvell sees it through, just because his philosophy, I think, would be so effective with a really talented group up front that he hasn't really had yet. But I do think they're going to be solid this year. It'd just be frustrating to have a coach who would fit such good talent up front and then to lose it right when you're going to realize, you know what I'm saying, that talent up front, to be able to do some really fun, special things. But it'll be what it is. We'll find out.
And I don't want to do the schedule conversation, but I feel like when I look at the roster overall and the coaching and where they are, they seem to be, with the combination of, as you mentioned, I think the defense, if they can all, most for the large part, stay healthy and you get the production you kind of expect, especially in the DBs and the D-line, you've got a really good group. And then with Jordan Travis's explosion, the running ability, and again, it's another if he can stay healthy, but that's the name of football, especially with a running quarterback. If he stays healthy, you have what I'm going to call a puncher's chance in every game for the most part. And that's all maybe that's a 7-5 roster, but that's fun. At least you can, you know, every Saturday you've got a chance to win, which is probably better than where you've been a lot recently.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think they were 3-3 maybe in one score games last year, but they played 6 1 score games, right?
Yeah, it's a ton.
And they finished 5-7. They could have easily gone 7-5 and got to a bowl game. And I know Adam and I, and even on this pod, we talked a lot about it, even, you know, Atomic Nation as a whole last year, was that trajectory, you know, and the Bobby Bowden thing, you win, you lose a lot, then you lose a little, then you win a lot, and then you win a little, and then you win a lot. Right. And we thought last year was the lose a little, and that kind of ended up, you know, how it went. They cut a couple of games, could have gone their way, and it just didn't. Like Notre Dame, obviously, right out of the bat, kind of set the tone for the rest of the year, what we saw. We're not going to mention Jacksonville State.
What game?
I don't know. So, but I do think this might be the win a little season, right? So you would hope maybe if you had a little bit of bad luck last year in the one score games, maybe it turns into your favor this year. That's typically how it goes. But ending at 50-50 last year, who knows? But again, if you end up, you know, say you get 4 1 score games, you do 3-1, and FSU's making a bowl game, right? So
right.
I do think this is going to be the win a little year. But again, it's to Max's point, right, from earlier. It's consistency that we're looking for across the whole roster.
I think one of the most important parts is, though, you have a lot of players who are coming back, like Jamie Robinson, mm-hmm. who won one of the best awards in the conference, is coming back. You have a lot of players, like Fabian Lovett. You have the team is not – last year they had a bunch of pieces who were trying to work with each other and introducing each other to the new schemes. But this season I think that – it's just so many players that have already worked with each other. So we'll see how they can work as a unit next season.
And it's a good point, because when you rely a lot on the transfers, you end up having just here's a bunch of new faces and hope it works. But if you can at least, and that's, like I said earlier, kind of part of the new nature of college football. But if you have those core pieces to be the leaders of the units, and you can just have those transfers in, just do what they're supposed to do instead of asking them to be Jermaine Johnson, then that makes a lot more of them, you know, if you have Andrew Parchment come in and just be like, hey, just make a couple of grabs, but don't be wide receiver one, you know, that probably helps a lot. So, you know, if they can find those things, that's great. So, again, I don't want to do the schedule show. So what we're doing instead is the power ranking show is what I'll call it. I haven't seen, and you guys can let me know if I missed it, an ACC kickoff media poll for where teams finish projected winners. I haven't seen it, so I don't believe it to exist. So I'm forcing these guys to do it. I forced them to send me before the show kind of their rankings, and I'm not doing it. Is it 1 to 14? I think it is. I'm making you do it. I made them do it in the groupings. One, these teams are definitely better than FSU. Two, these teams are about the same. And three, these teams are worse. Definitely worse. Which I think is fair, right? I think that's probably the easier way to go about it. Camp hasn't even started for these teams. We're still a month probably away from any of them even seeing the field. So it's a spot to just be like, hey, from what I know about this roster, from where I feel confident in FSU's team, this is where I think we can end up, anywhere in this range. Again, the football isn't round, so any bounce goes anyway, and that's why I think you just end up with a large middle toss-up area. So I want to start with the bottom, the teams that are definitely worse, because I think we'll kind of slide through those rather quickly. You guys are pretty much in agreement. The three you guys both agreed on that were definitely worse than FSU, Syracuse, Georgia Tech, and Duke. I really don't see much in the way there to hold us on. Anyone have anything they care to say about the three of them? I see some shaking heads that say no.
My only comment will be, because of that game last year that we won't talk about, I mean, at this point forward, Florida State can absolutely, under Norvell, lose to any team. We can't say that they can, because that team was a lot worse than those three we just listed off. So yeah. I'm just going to put that out there, although I do think Florida State is definitely easily better than those.
So on that one too, and again, all of this, like I said, we're doing it with the caveat of this is pre-camp. Rosters will drastically change. Kids could get suspended. You know, there's lots that can change. Some guy falls on his ankle, and next thing you know, somebody's star player is out of there. I think, was it Boston College who lost their best guard, who's like a top prospect in the draft? You know, I mean, those types of things, they're going to happen. So, I mean, that was a spring injury, but, you know, those things will happen, and rosters will change. And as John said, any given day with this roster, especially because someone can land on your quarterback's leg, and then I won't even put his name on that, but you know, that changes everything you are really, really quickly. So the two you guys actually disagreed with in that range, Max had Virginia Tech as worse than FSU. John had him as a coin toss. And then vice versa was John had Boston College worse than FSU, and Max had them as a coin toss. Anyone feel confidently in why they think either Boston College or Virginia Tech belongs in the coin toss versus the definitely worse? Personally, I think Boston College goes in the coin toss on quarterback alone. I think with it was a jerk. Help me out there, Max. You got to know.
I think it's like Phil Jerkovich,
something like that. I think he's fun. But again, you just went there last week and beat them. So I can see John's point there. Maybe that's where it came from.
A little bit. Yeah, he's good. I'm not going to say he's not, but it's the rest of the roster that I have issues with. But I don't have any issues either way. I could have gone another way with it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and that's fair. I think, like I said, I think the bottom of this, you guys are putting teams that are probably right there and on that same line. I think when you've got a quarterback, it's maybe, you know, that's where it becomes that kind of coin toss range. Like you said, I mean, if there's their true quote unquote best player was this guard who got injured and he's gone, and now the offensive line might be a disaster. Well, you know, it doesn't really matter how much better he really is. But watching him last year, he was a fun college quarterback. The guy who lowers his shoulder reminded me of, was it Colin Klein at Kansas State a few years ago? He'd just lower his shoulder, just run a dude over and get a touchdown if he needed it. And it was just, you know, it was weird, but it made K-State fun for a year. So that was cool. Virginia Tech's the other one. And John, I think you originally let them off. So I know you probably just tossed them into coin toss. Max, you went with them definitely worse. I don't know. I think Virginia Tech's kind of just that they're okay at football. Right. That's kind of, I think that's kind of where we're at, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't, like you said, I don't think any of the teams are definitely 100%. Florida State's going to go to their stadium, absolutely going to beat them if we played tomorrow. But I think I'm in pretty general agreement with that list of Syracuse, Georgia Tech, Duke, definitely. Boston College, probably worse. Virginia Tech, probably coin tossy to slightly worse. So then the coin toss range becomes interesting too. The only team that is different, I'll get to it. The ones you guys are in agreement, Louisville, North Carolina, and Virginia. I want to start with Louisville because to me, I did the podcast, and if you listen to it, you know, great. If you haven't, I'd recommend going back and listening to it because nothing's changed. It's been 2 months and it's about the same. I did it with my friend Tyler, who worked in the athletic department for Louisville for 2 years. And boy, if me and him didn't just end up saying, this is the Spider-Man meme over and over again. I mean, we even have a Louisville quarterback. Like, it's the same team.
Yeah.
I think that's a perfect example when you look at their roster. That's kind of who Louisville's been for the last few years. I mean, I can't remember. It's Malik Cunningham and a bunch of guys. And that, I think that's how, if you weren't a Florida State fan, you'd probably list Florida State as Jordan Travis and a bunch of guys.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Malik Cunningham is very dynamic. He's fun. Consistency has been his issue. But I don't know. Satterfield, right? Their coach. They had a really good, they had a one good year, and then they've been kind of since then. And I heard some rumblings last year that he might get fired.
He flirted with going to South Carolina, which kind of pissed some people off up there.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So I'm just not, I think that maybe Satterfield's time, I think they're just kind of, I don't know, the excitement's gone from that program, right? And it's kind of just winding down.
Well, then I think, and Max, I know you're our resident kid in the trenches on recruiting here. So I think Louisville's been doing really well on the recruiting lately. So I don't know if that helps in the momentum aspect, but I mean, when it comes down to it, this is a team that FSU, again, we talked about it, it's a coin toss. And if you really want to get to this game, it's a Friday night in Louisville. So, I mean, you'll be coming off a bye. So I think that is a perfect fit for a coin toss.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just like you said, it's going to be quarterback against quarterback, what each can do on the floor, what each can do. Not what each can do on the floor, actually, because we know that they're both going to do something on the floor. They're both going to maybe put 50-plus yards on the floor. So whoever can whoever can toss up the ball like they're actually a quarterback
will win. Yeah, right.
And I know Louisville has had trouble last year or the seasons before with their secondary.
Yeah.
They went and they got players in the transfer portal. They did things in their secondary and they got players for their defensive line. I know their defense was an issue before, but that'll be another question. I would have us beating them, but I know we have a tough schedule. Not us, but I have Florida State beating them, but there's a tough schedule in between there.
Yeah, and that, like I said, that's the – I did the preview. I wrote the preview up for that one as well, and that was it's like I said, a Friday night. It's for Florida State, the schedule is the Duquesne, the LSU game on that Sunday night, by the following week, which I presume would be the Duquesne game, and then that following Friday night you're at Louisville. So, you know, it's, you get a chance to prepare, but it's also that awkward Friday night road game. And I think, as I wrote it, like, best case scenario is FSU goes in and they have the answer for Malik Cunningham and they beat him by 50. And the realistic scenario is it's a boat race. Both teams score back and forth forever. And the worst case scenario is they have the answer for Jordan Travis and they beat EU by 50.
Yeah. I think you're also going to get two FSUs. You're going to get one that either comes off of the LSU game with a loss, going to have a chip on their shoulder off the bye week that's going to really want that win. Or you're going to have an FSU with overconfidence that just LSU that is going to want to keep going and keep the streak alive. So we'll see what that goes.
Yeah, I think if you look at Louisville and the way they compare, that's that the Spider-Man meme is perfect. Just the two identical, it's looking in a mirror. It's the same roster. It's a quarterback who can absolutely beat you all game long with his legs if you don't have an answer, and a roster you hope has figured out the problems and is ready to rock. Elsewhere, North Carolina, I think, is an interesting one. I see where you guys are with them being a similar team to FSU. But, you know, they've got a lot of changes to make there in replacing a lot of the – well, I mean, I guess not really a lot, but, you know, replacing the quarterback isn't exactly easy. It was Sam Howell, right? It's not exactly an easy thing to do in college football. So, I mean, Max, you just kind of just taking them as a program, you think kind of can hold on with Mac Brown leading?
Well, the problem with North Carolina that I saw, which just like you said, they've lost people. They lost Sam Howell. They lost their running back, and they lost four starters on their offensive line.
That's so, a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, Florida State beat them last season. It's going to be a toss-up again because they have a good coach. They're going to have a good offensive system again. But to come back and just – it depends when that game is scheduled, if it's midseason, if it's late season, to come back and just be – have that offense ready. I don't know if they'll do it that quickly.
Yeah. The one thing I would say positive for North Carolina, and you know, John, I don't know if you've got a ton of takes on North Carolina, was I watching football last year. I distinctly remember maybe October. I'm watching North Carolina. I forget. Maybe it was Wake Forest. It was a big shootout game. And I think their receiver is Josh Downs, and he went off. And I was sitting there as the Saints fan in me went, man, I hope Josh Downs is there when we pick in the first round, because that kid's a stud. Between him and Olave, I think they're the two best receivers I've seen play all season. And I looked it up, and he was a freshman. So, you know, I was like, holy, okay, so that's great. But the kid would end up like with 12, 13 receptions and 180 yards like every game. It was unbelievable. So, I mean, they have him, but who's now without Sam Howell, who's throwing him the ball?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, I think they have other pieces in that receiving core, but it's going to be that relationship that they built with whatever quarterback is going to be there.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that too. I think the story of the ACC this year will be regression for most teams. I think that creates a window of opportunity for Florida State, but definitely North Carolina, based on everything you guys have talked about, is definitely one of those candidates for regression. Howell was great as a freshman, but never really kind of developed the way he would have hoped that he did. I do think Mack Brown is a good coach. I think he's recruited at North Carolina decently well. I think it gives him a floor, but I think it's clear that the ceiling that he wants to win the ACC is just not there. But I think that they could be competitive with Florida State. So that's why I put them in coin toss.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think it's a roster. You know, I mean, Mack Brown at this point is obviously, you know, he's not Mack Brown of old at Texas, but I think he knows how to build a competent roster that isn't going to just fall off of a cliff. So I think that's where you end up still in that similar to FSU range. I want to save the one you guys agreed with in this range, Virginia, because I love them. So we'll get to them in a second, but I want to go first to the team you guys disagreed with, because John, I think you kind of hit on it, regression. And the team you guys disagreed on is Pitt. John, you put them in the coin toss category. Max, you had them better than FSU. John, I assume you've got them lower because of Kenny Pickett.
Yeah, they lost Pickett and Addison.
Addison went to USC, is that correct?
Yeah, and then the other for Lincoln Riley. I mean, I can't blame them. But also, and you know, I think the deciding factor for me to drop them into coin toss was Pat Narduzzi's comments at the ACC Media Days. That guy, I don't know what his problem is. But he had some just salty comments that didn't make any sense to me. He was pissed at his former offense coordinator. Was it Whipple or whatever his name was?
Yeah, he was. Remember. Yeah, he torched him. Yeah.
Yeah. About like, oh, we didn't run the ball enough and blah, blah, blah. You had a Heisman contender at QB, right? And the best receiver in college football. You're setting all these passing records and all this other stuff, throwing the ball. He complained about the game of Wake Forest that they didn't run the ball enough. You put up like 45 points against Wake. It was just it seemed like some comments that, and they weren't just salty, but the guy seemed I don't know. When you have that kind of attitude, I think, as a head coach, I think the head coach always sets the tone, and that kind of tone infects the rest of the team eventually, kind of filters down, right? Because that's how it works. Yeah. And his comments, like, man. So I think Pitt's due for a serious regression. Again, their defense was pretty weak last year in certain areas. So without Pickett, without Addison, and again, I think they're going to be competitive, but I don't see, they're not winning anywhere close to 10 games this year.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the quote here. Okay, so this is from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. So thank you to them for helping me find this on the Google search. Quote, I had an offensive coordinator. I won't even mention his name at Pitt. He spent eight months with me, left to go take one of those big jobs. And I said, I don't think you want to go. Okay. He torched him. And then he started talking about how he wouldn't run the ball, right? That was his whole rant, was how even when they had easy boxes, he wouldn't run the ball. Oh, here it is. Our old offensive coordinator had no desire to run the ball. Everybody knew it. He was stubborn. Wake Forest was 118th in run defense, and we threw the ball every damn down. And when we ran it for 10 yards, but somehow that still wasn't good enough. And we just kept throwing the ball. That's weird.
Yeah, it is weird. It's beyond weird. It's nonsensical to me. I can't explain it.
It reminded me of Les Miles' time at LSU, because even when they would have Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham as receivers, who are still out here being, you know, elite wide receivers in the NFL, more than a decade later, it was run the ball up the middle 100 times a game. And if someone came in and suggested they should throw it more, it was like, no, that's stupid. And it's like it sounded like Narduzzi was mad that they had a great quarterback and an awesome receiver who were phenomenal and pushed them to the top of the conference. It was like he was jaded by his own success. It was really bizarre. And I like that point a lot.
Well, I mean, look, maybe I'm cynical, but I feel like I've watched a lot of college football in my life. And coaches that tend to make statements like, yeah, do not change. And they tend to continue to make the bad decisions. You have incredible talent, and your opinion is that, oh, we should still just run the ball and ignore the talent that you have, when talent is 80% of all the winning in college football. It's just, I already know where that's going to go. You know what I'm saying? It might take 3 years. It could take 8 years. I don't know, but we all know where it's going to end up. And so I don't think again, barring them getting lucky into another type of talent like Pickett, they're not going to come close to 10 wins ever again. So I can kind of see Florida State and Pitt just passing each other in the next couple of years.
Anything, Max, on why you put Pitt as better? Was it just you're not expecting too much of a fall off? Maybe Pickett, it's.
I mean, I'm not expecting too much of a fall off from the defense. They return a lot of people. They had one. I mean, I'm not going to say the best, but they have one of the best safety duos in the ACC. I won't say the best. Like I said, again, they have returning defensive tackles. They have a decent played next to Jordan Addison last year. They have a decent wide receiver that came back, and they traded him for Slovis from USC, who I can't say I have watched much film on him, but he can't be too bad. And I think he'll do something there.
No, I think Slovis is pretty good. In case anyone hasn't figured it out, I played a lot of college football DFS last season. And no, I think Slovis is a great receiver. That just ends up forcing me to watch a lot of games. It's why I know Josh Downs and Addison and all those types of guys. And it's actually, that's a perfect jump, because I'll just go ahead and take this vine while I've got it. You guys both had Virginia in your coin toss category, right? Let me check it. Yep, you both did. I absolutely loved Virginia a year ago. They were just a fun offense to watch. They were a fun offense to target in DFS, which was great for me and making dollars and things. But, you know, they had Brennan Armstrong at quarterback, the receivers, Wicks, Thompson. I should probably look it up. Kemp. Yeah. Kemp, Billy Kemp, IV. Thank you to Google for that one. and they're supposed to get another receiver back from the guy who broke out in 2020. The only thing that makes me, I guess, hesitant on, I think, Virginia being similar to what I felt like Pitt was last year is, one, Armstrong was hurt last year, and he's a frequent runner guy. So does he have the bangs and bruises again that would then cost him time? But then the coaching change. I mean, you know, how much of what they were doing was, you know, Bronco Mendenhall being a coach that let them do that? Or was he really just holding them back? And now that they've changed coaches, and they went with, help me out, Elliott from Clemson, right? Yeah. And you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe he mixed them even better. And if they're just a fun offense and they end up being what Pitt was last year, or North Carolina has been with Sam Howell, you know, I still wouldn't probably put them in the definitely better than FSU category, but I would put them on maybe the higher end of coin toss.
Can I ask you?
Go ahead, Max.
Yeah.
You said you watched a lot of, I don't know if you watched a lot of Virginia, but you said they were exciting last year.
Yeah.
I'm actually curious, what makes Brennan Armstrong so appealing? Like, everyone's so high on him.
So that's a great question. Honestly, I really can't even tell you. He can run. He throws like good. And so like when I watch him play, and I don't want to do this because the name, here's how I'll say it, and please just follow with me. To me, watching him makes me think Johnny Manziel, but instead of Mike Evans, he has average receiver. And like, because like, I think if Johnny Manziel doesn't have Mike Evans, he sucks. Because like, if you go and look at that game against Alabama that won him the Heisman, he just ran all over the place, threw an absolute rainbow in the middle of the field. And it just happened that his receiver was the biggest, baddest dude on the field. And that dude is out here clowning NFL caliber corners every week. So to me, it's like, he's going to probably do something stupid a lot, but it's fun. Like if I'm a fan of Virginia, I'm like, you know what? At least we're fun. Like if I've got to watch my basketball team win games 43-40 and I go to the football team and they're probably going to win games 43-40. At least we're fun. And that's and you know, like when Drew Brees retired, my one wish for the Saints was like, okay, I'm fine if we don't win anything. Just be fun. And so I think like that's where I end up when I watch Virginia versus when I watch what Florida State ended up being for a few times, especially early last season, where it was like, are we Milton? Are we Tom? Are we Travis? And then it was even when you put back Travis in, then it was kind of like no one could make a catch. It just feels like for some reason, Virginia on like 3rd and 17. I'm pretty confident someone's getting 19 yards. I don't know who it's going to be, but that was just how I felt watching Virginia every time last season. I don't know if they really even won a lot of games, if they even scored a lot of points, but I just sure felt like on 3rd and 17, there was the guy wide open. Here comes John to tell me they only scored like 7 points a game.
No.
They averaged 106 yards.
I am looking up the standings. Hold on.
Yeah, okay. I should probably pull up the CFB stats on the team because that would probably help out a lot. What you had, Max? You want to grill me? It's fine.
No.
But yeah, they finished 6-6. And like you said, I mean, I thought Bronco was a pretty solid head coach.
Yeah.
But people said Tony Elliott was a lot of the big reason for Clemson's success over the last half decade. But we'll find out. But I mean, they were good. They were fun. I'm not going to lie. I agree with you. They're exciting. Whatever they're going to be this year, though, I have no idea.
Yeah. So they averaged 35 points a game. They gave up 33.
That's fun.
Yeah,
it's fun. That is fun.
So Brendan Armstrong completion percentage, 65%. 9 yards per completion, 31 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 156 QB rating, average 404 yards per game. So, all right, great. Thank you, Brendan Armstrong, for not being as garbage as I was.
According to Fan Nation here, and I don't know where they got this. I don't know if it was from ESPN or PFF or wherever it is. It says Brendan Armstrong was one of those prolific passers, leading the Cavs to the number 2 passing attempt and number 3 offense in the nation.
Yes, so there you go. I was just pumping my face
from, but it looks like you're right.
I can pull it up. I got so Max, and for anyone else listening, cfbstats.com is a wonderful resource. I go to it all the time. Number 2 passing offense in the country, averaging 392.6 yards per game. Obviously, him by himself, he missed one game. So in that one game, they were at 400 and something. So yeah, second in the country, and then the scoring offense. Looks like they were, I got to search. Hold on. A little Google search. 21st, averaging 35 points a game. But, yeah, I mean, I think if Tony Elliott makes them more fun, the only two ACC teams ahead of them are Pitt and Wake Forest from last season. So if somehow he could make them even slightly more efficient or a little less, like, chaotic, I mean, that, you know, I think that's – if you can find consistency at quarterback on slinging the ball like that with a guy who can still run a little bit, I think that's, again – probably still coin toss with FSU concerning the rest of the roster, but you know, I really like Virginia. My 2 cents. But thank you for Max for sending me down the rabbit hole that allowed me to find more information to even back up the argument I wasn't even prepared to make. Thank you.
Now you love them even more.
I know. I was like, now I love them even more. I'm about to call a friend in another state. Let's get you on a plane to Vegas, Brian. Let's put down some Brendan Armstrong Heisman money. Okay, so that covers our coin toss category. And I think we probably want to spend more time on this better than FSU section. You guys are lockstep on 4 teams for definitely better than FSU. And your order is almost identical. So I think I'm not sure on how much time you guys really put into the 4-1 on this one. You probably didn't, but I assume it was you guys put the first team that came to mind first, and that's probably how it went. 4th on the list is the same for both of you, and it's Wake Forest. And I wrote the preview for Wake also, and I think Wake looks almost like the same team as last year. And so I totally am in agreement on thinking that they are, on paper at this point in time, should be better than FSU.
Yeah, I mean, Wake has this history of redshirting everybody on their entire team. Yeah. And so they'll be okay or bad for a couple of years, and then they'll have an insane year where they play for the conference title or they win it, you know, outright. And then they drop down a lot the following year. I thinking they're going to follow some of the same pattern. I think they benefited more than almost any other team in the country from that COVID year with the extra year of eligibility. I thought they took a huge advantage of that.
Yeah.
But with that said, again, the story of the conference is regression. I think Wake is one of the biggest candidates for that. I still think they're going to be very good. So I don't know if they're going to win 9 or 10 games, something like that. But they were my, again, I think they're going to drop down, but they're kind of sort of in that same area. Like we talked about Boston College, Virginia Tech as between worse than and coin toss. I think Wake's going to be just a little bit solidly better, but they're not going to be a conference contender again, I don't think.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. Like I said, I wrote the preview on them, and it's like you said, it's a very veteran team. And Max, I'm sure it's a lot of that same type of stuff for you, man.
I think what's the issue with Wake Forest right now is that the spotlight's on them.
Yeah.
They have the lights on them. They have the media attention, the fanfare. So it's what they can do. It's what Sam Hartman can do again. He has his receivers coming back, his receivers who led him to some great games last year. So I think the offense will be close to the same, not electric like last season, but close to the same. But their defense, they have a brand new defensive coordinator. So, and I don't think it was very good last season. So that's one of the issues that they'll have. And I don't know if they can replicate what they did.
Well, I guess the one thing, and John, I'll go to you on the X's and O's of this one, because I make sure that I'm right on this one. But the two names that always stand out to me, or I don't say always, because I mean, it's college football, they don't last forever. But yeah, you know, Sam Hartman and A.T. Perry, right? The two guys, Perry the receiver, Hartman the quarterback. It's to me what, and I, again, Downs is only a redshirt freshman or whatever. But like, you know, when you've got that combo, it reminds me of maybe not what Pickett is and what Addison is, but in that realm that allows you to be capable. And John, again, I want to go to you on this one. They run their scheme is a little, it's like crafty. Is that right? It's the mesh scheme. Is that what they're going with a lot over there?
Yeah, it should be illegal. I think it's a crime in every state except North Carolina. I'm just kidding. No. Yeah. Hartman is really good. I'm not going to lie. He's good. He's just super annoying that Wake Forest continues to get these guys. I swear he's just Riley Skinner in his 10th year. Riley Skinner was the guy, I forgot his name, that was before him. It's just the same guy who just, he's a vampire and he just plays for 40 years. I can't explain it, but no, Wake Forest is going to be good. They ride that mesh forever. And you're like, okay, well, the simple thing is just blow it up. Just send three guys in the backfield, just blow it up. And if you can get there, it works. But somehow, so frustratingly, most teams just can't get there. Yeah. So they ride the mesh for 3-4 seconds until finally, and then they see what the defense does, and then they take off, they hand it off, and one of them goes. It's super annoying, especially because it's so effective.
Yeah,
I hate it. And again, I'm a big believer. Like, look, people, you know, the game's evolution. It's beautiful for what it is. I appreciate it. I do not appreciate this. It's terrible. It sucks. And they shouldn't be allowed to do it. No, but seriously, I think Wake's going to be really good. It's going to be a really tough out. If Florida State beats them somehow, it'll be like Florida State beating North Carolina, right? The team was much better. They had some fluky turnovers, picking off Howell and the fumbles and things like that. It'll be like that. So I don't expect Florida State to win that game.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, you look, I think a lot of the list ends up falling in, I guess what I'll describe it as, your confidence in the other team's quarterback versus FSU's, right? I mean, as much as we talk about Jordan Travis and the dynamic he brings with his legs, there's the question mark of how he's progressed with his arm and his pass catchers still remain as a question mark. When I can look at Wake and say, if they need a first down, it's Hartman to Perry, boom, first down, move the chains. And if it's FSU, it's, man, I hope Jordan Travis can make enough guys miss. So I guess that's where you end up on a lot of these teams. And I think a great example of that, and honestly, I don't even know if we have pass catcher for this one, but you guys are both same thing. This one, you guys went 2 and 3, so slightly different, but you know, it's Miami. Miami, another team that we've listed as better. And I have to think, and Max, I'll go to you, this one to you first here. A TBD has got to be a big reason why.
Yeah, and I did one of the podcasts for the UM preview. I talked to him, and he said that Tyler Van Dyke has already had a great spring ball. He was super consistent throughout the spring, and he's talked with Manny. I mean, I'm sorry, not Manny, talked with Mario throughout the offseason, and he's made sure that he's going to be the lock there and make sure that he has to produce. So I think he's going to take a big step. When I was talking to him, I said, "Is
you
this
got his guy name?
Really a top to – his name is Adam Lichtenstein. Lichtenstein, something like that. When I talked to him, I said, is he really a top 5, top 10 quarterback? He said, I have him at top 10 right now. He said, if he keeps going and producing, I have him as a top 3 quarterback, which I think is a little much, but I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up a top maybe 7 quarterback in the nation.
Yeah. I remember this from last year and coming in and everything. De'Ara King was the quarterback down there in Miami, and help me with this one in case I get it wrong, but I remember him being the crown jewel of the transfer portal. Was it last year or the year before, where it was like, this guy's like, I think he's older than Tua, right? And it was like the Miami's starting quarterback is older than the Dolphins quarterback. And it was like a whole thing. And he was, you know, that guy. And whether, you know, hopefully the guy who guides Manny Diaz, saves the season, helps bring the U back. And he only gave you 3 games, and lucky for the U or for Miami, it ends up being the freshman who was just unbelievable. I mean, the guy was, he threw for 293 yards a game, 25 touchdowns, six interceptions, a 160 passer rating. I just gushed over Brennan Armstrong, and those numbers are all, well, except for the yards per game, those are all better. And he did it in 10 games as a true freshman. I mean, obviously, I think Miami has a long way to go to being where they think they are or belong, but he's a great piece to start with.
Yeah, I agree with everything, Max, you guys have said. Tyler Van Dyke is he's really good. Unfortunately, I think it is really bad luck for Florida State to have Kyle Trask emerge from behind Felipe Franks at UF. And then right after that, Van Dyke comes out behind De'Aaron King in Miami. And they're both ended up being much better than their predecessors. So it sucks for Florida State.
Does that mean it's Tate season?
What's that?
Does that mean it's Tate season? Or?
Oh, maybe. Yeah. And you'd think at some point Florida State is going to have that kind of like fun. I mean, not Jameis, but the fun emergence at QB. Not anything against Jordan Travis. He could have that breakout year, but man, it sucks to have both of your main rivals, just these QBs that are really, really good, just show up out of nowhere and kind of torch you. What are you going to do? But Miami, I mean, they got that excitement. I know they're recruiting well. Everyone, those kids are just talking about them. They got that it factor, which, again, it's just you through word of mouth. It's not really through anything ever. It could be totally no substance behind it. But that's all it takes for these kids to start talking. Then everyone wants to play there. So we'll see what, you know, now they finally allegedly have support for the football program. So we'll see what comes of that. But I do think that they're going to be better than Florida State this year. Florida State's just not quite there. We'll see what Miami really is. Again, you can't say that they're a real contender. I think they could play for the ACC title, but they're not playing for anywhere close to the national title.
Right. And I think it's the same thing where there are holes. There are enough holes where I don't think this is a massively better. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people listening are sitting here screaming, you know, we just beat them. Didn't you watch it? Fourth down. And you know, I mean, I hear you, right? I mean, and I don't really disagree, but I mean, how much of that is a home game? How much of that is, and again, it's fourth down. If you don't get that, then you lose then, even the home game. And, you know, I just don't know if I think it's another situation where I don't know if they're like head and shoulders. Absolutely. If FSU goes down to the Rock this year, they're going to get run out the stadium. But I think if you gave me the choice, I'd rather have DVD.
Well, that's exactly. That's the difference to me is I think this is a case of both teams improving this year from what they were last year.
Right.
But you have to give the edge to Miami because of Van Dyke. And again, that's not a slide against Jordan Travis. It's just Van Dyke was, like Max had described, you guys have talked about a little bit ago. He was just a revelation for them at quarterback. The kid's really, really good. And that's the difference.
And I'm trying to remember the running back they had emerged to late in the year too. Let me pull up his name here. It'll take probably two clicks of the button. Was it Jalen Knighton? Yeah. Dude was explosive. He's fast. It's another freshman.
Former FSU commit.
Yeah. Well, that one hurts even more. There we go. Thank you, Max. See, these are my blind spots. That's why I have you guys.
Well, we took Devontae Freeman and Dalvin Cook, so I think it's okay.
Those worked out just fine. Yeah, I think at the end of the day, you're happy with those trades. But yeah, I mean, dude's explosive. And you know, he was, it felt like, obviously, like I said, Van Dyke could hit the long passes and make those drop beautifully right into a guy's hand if he needed them. And if he had to just get out of his hand, it seemed like Knighton always made the play that turned a 3-yard little dump off into a 73-yard touchdown. And you know, those are the type of things that I don't know if FSU has that person yet either. So again, I don't know if it's that different, but like John said, I think at the end of the day, you there's a couple of things there that maybe sway your opinion. The next one I think on our list, and you guys again back and forth, one of you had a two, one of you had a three, is NC State. And I've seen them some places favored to win the conference. So why exactly? And John, I'll go to you this one first. Thing I went Max last time. John, why NC State? What makes them the favorite?
Well, first of all, does Florida State play in Raleigh this year? I can't remember.
I'll pull it up.
Yeah, if they do, and Max is nodding yes, then I mean that's probably going to be a loss because that's how it seems to go. No, but for real, North Carolina State last year. Yeah, okay, so that sucks. North Carolina State last year, had one of, if not the best defensive line in the entire country. Those guys were monsters, absolutely ferocious. They lost a lot of talent. So again, regression, but I think they're still solidly better than Florida State. I just had to look up because I forgot. I think NC State won the tiebreaker against Clemson. I think they finished second in the ACC Atlantic standings behind Wake. So again, Wake, NC State is not, a lot of people overlook them. You know, Florida State's traditionally supposed to just be better than them, but NC State's been very difficult out for Florida State over the last decade plus. And so I just, again, whatever regression they may have, I do not think Florida State has made up the difference this year.
Well, Nate, that's another situation where you get the return of the quarterback, right? That seems to be it. Leary was fine. Yep. Beyond fine, right? I think it was, again, it's another situation. Give me 3 seconds here. I think he was great last year. If I pull up the numbers, I think it's a situation where he's better than we actually remembered he was. 1 second. I'm sorry. I have to do everyone watching Google here. Yeah. So 12 games last year as a sophomore, 65.7% completion percentage, 35 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, 287 yards game.
There's a lot of good quarterbacks in this conference.
Yeah. Yeah. Which hurts. And that's, again, it ends up back in that same realm. And I think, Max, you were very quick to nod on they're playing Raleigh this year. I assume that played a pretty decent part in your decision too.
Well, I just think like they lost their best offensive lineman. They lost people on the edge, but they're just like you said before, and I don't want to keep being repetitive, but we're going to rank these based on who has the best quarterback or who has not Clemson, but who has the best quarterback after that. And they just keep going up and up, and it seems like there's a bunch of good quarterbacks. They also have a great linebacker group, and I think this is a team that doesn't play – I mean, maybe you guys don't agree with me, but they don't try to play they want to win the game. They're not trying to play a fancy game. Whatever they need to do to win that game, it doesn't matter if it's home or away, they want to win the game and put the win in their column.
Yeah, and it's a perfect example of – and I think we talked about it a few weeks ago – of like they remind me of the team that's, like you said, is just going to fight it out. We talked conferences a few weeks ago of that, like they're good, you know, they might be maybe in that mythical world where Vandy and them switch out, which again, it seemed like a pipe dream. That was a John Skipper idea, but it was just floated out there to make both conferences more money. But they did when we talked about it, I was like, man, that identity of NC State reminds me a lot of those SEC teams where outside of Vanderbilt, you just don't know if you're going to beat them because it just, everyone is willing to just beat you over the head if they beat you by a point. And that is a lot what NC State is. It feels that way. I remember last year, their defense was great. Like you mentioned, the linebackers and things, and I know they lost a lot of talent, but I distinctly remember last year, I forget the linebacker's name, but I remember watching the game when he tore his ACL. I remember it was a knee injury, but like at that point in the game, they were leading. And it just felt like they had nothing. And maybe the rest of the year, they were just a notch worse, you know. And I think, obviously, if you're a defense like that and you lose a leader, it ends up being a problem. I think he came back. Again, I can't – the name's escaping me. I forget what it is. Maybe it was him or
– Thomas?
No, let me see. I'm sure he's probably one of their leading tacklers. I'm pretty quick to get the list here. Yeah, like I said, it was an ACL. Oh, Moore. Looks like he's back. Yeah. But yeah, so he had torn an ACL, so that's gotta be the guy. But yeah, I like distinctly remember watching the game and I forget what game it was. It was raining, I want to believe. And I might've been Virginia cause I'm a degenerate. But yeah, I distinctly remember this defense just being that type of ferocious sideline to sideline, chase you down. And I think they run the, you know, they're very aggressive getting to the sidelines and try to, which is great for, you know, that type of spread you out and whatnot in this era of football, but especially in the ACC, when you have these types of quarterbacks and everything, it feels like that type of fight that they have is what helps keep them up. And again, we're talking about probable regression, but I don't know if this conference has a clear best team. Although you guys were in lockstep on the first team, you guys immediately said we're better than FSU, and I'll just go ahead and go to them now so I can quit tinkering around trying to figure out one guy's name. And surprise, surprise, it's Clemson, led by Dabo, who killed the gritty a few weeks ago. And I don't mean like he did a great job, like your children will say he killed it. He ended its life, rip. That's the end of the of the gritty. Dabo ruined it, but he was forced to ACC media day, kickoff day, go to bat for DJ. I guess maybe this is the roster where it's almost the opposite of what we've been saying, where you absolutely know the quarterback for this team is definitely better. And I think at the end of the day, I don't know if DJ is head and shoulders better, if he's really a coin toss. I know the expectation was for him to be a lot better, but I think it's the rest of the roster I'm a lot more confident in at Clemson, though I know the rumor was the transfer portal and Dabo's unwillingness to use it as the roster falling apart. I still have the confidence that Clemson is at this point still Clemson. And John, I think you have to wait to see them fall apart before you get there, right?
Well, we talked a lot of, you give them the benefit of the doubt because that's what happens when you're a multi or perennial national title contender. But we talked a lot last year on this pod about the holes in Clemson's armor just starting to appear a little bit more and more and more.
Yeah.
And I think they've gone through a tremendous amount of transition in the last season or two, right? You lose Trevor Lawrence. Now you've lost Tony Elliott. You lost Brent Venables, right? Who stayed there. We all thought he was going to be there forever, but he couldn't turn down, the Oklahoma job. It must've been a dream job for him. So I, again, regression, I expect Clemson to get worse. They had an easily elite national title level defense last year that was wasted by an offense that had no talent at receiver, a quarterback who couldn't read the field, an average or middling, even below, maybe perhaps below average offensive line, but they still had some talent at running back. Will DJ improve? We don't know. He may not. He may be the kind of like their version of EJ, although I think EJ was better than what DJ has shown so far in his career. But he could be their version of that kind of thing, right? Where he's got all the tools and everything that you want to see. But as far as reading the field, sometimes it's just not there. I think he talked in media days about losing something like 30 pounds. They bulked him up for all of the hits that he thought he was going to take. Now I think they're going to run him a lot more this season. That should hopefully help him. But I could tell back when he was, subbing in for Lawrence that I think I wrote an article about it. I did a preview for Clemson on Top of the Nation last year.
He did.
And a lot of people are like, oh, wow. So you think Clemson's not going to win a game. But I'd be right. I mean, that season before, they had protected DJ in how they ran and called that offense. Lots of super easy throws and things like that. And their offense for the most part last year was the exact same. But again, you lose some of that talent at receiver and you start to get a little anemic. I do think toward the end of the season, especially in that last quarter of the season, Uyangale did get better. And he did improve. So we'll see what he is coming in this year. But so far, man, I mean, they won 10 games last year. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. They will win 10 games again this year. But if they won 8 or 9, it would not shock me at all. Again, you're losing all that talent on defense. You're not going to be able to you lose Venables, who's one of, or if not the best defensive coordinator after Nick Saban in college football. So again, I think Clemson will continue their slide back to earth. I don't think they're going to be, I think their days of being a perennial national title contender are easily over. They will still compete for the ACC title, but how far they fall and how quickly, we'll find out.
Yeah. And Max, before I come to you, I do want to, because I assume you didn't listen to the pod last year, because I'm just going to assume it. And I'm sure some of our listeners probably didn't last year, but if you didn't, John spent about the entire the whole season dancing on his, I told you that DJ wasn't the second coming of Christ. I told you. It was a fun experience when every week Clemson would be that just either narrowly escape or take a bad loss. And he was like, see guys, I told you I wrote that article, but Clemson was all in my mentions telling me, no, DJ is going to win the Heisman. You're just a hater. You're an effort. And he's like, no, and honestly, the way you were describing the way they used him, and it reminds me a lot. And if an NFL guy, it makes me think immediately of the way I felt like the 49ers have used Trey Lance last season, where it was like, you just couldn't quite trust him with everything. And you tried to put training wheels on him when you could, and it didn't really work. And, again, it's an NFL thing. So who knows what he looks like this year, but it felt that same way where like, it was kind of like they were just using him when they could to just try to get his feet wet. And even that didn't seem to work. And then when they had to take the training wheels off last year, it does feel exactly like riding a bike for the first time, where sometimes it's rolling and you're going, but you don't quite know how to stop. And that is half of riding a bike, is stopping when you get there. And boy, was that a problem. And Max, you know, I come to you now and same thing, man. I mean, where do you see this Clemson roster compared to what FSU has? Like we talked about, I feel like they're sliding back, but I don't think they're slid back all the way yet.
Well, we talked about, and a lot of people have talked about their success in the transfer portal, and they talked about that, I think it was in May. And then in June, they come out and they get, I don't know if it's 13 or 14 commits from the 2023 and 2024 classes. Which one of them is one of the best defensive linemen in the class that was going against Alabama? So, yeah, they're coming back, but we're not too close, and some other teams are not too close just yet. So they have that defense next year that's going to be incredible, just like John said, that's going to be one of the best in the nation. But I think one of the biggest issues is that even though Dabo says, and even though other people are going to say DJ is going to be the starter and DJ is going to, he's going to do whatever he can, which is lose 30 pounds or gain whatever he needs to do. Clade Kupnick, who was a former five-star recruit, he's in the bullpen. He's waiting. He is warming up. And I think they're not going to wait till week seven. They're not going to wait till later in the season. If DJ doesn't produce in the first four or five games, I think Cade comes in. So I think that's one of the biggest issues for them is having that kind of, they're confused in what they should do next.
Yeah, and you just hope it doesn't land like Miami's did, right? You hope that the guy sitting there isn't the next Trevor Lawrence or Deshaun Watson or whatever. And actually, it's a perfect transfer. Let me just tell us a fun story. So, Max, I think I told you, going to Vegas first time, I got there immediately and immediately placed the sports bet, like, within seconds. the year was, I guess it was 2019. It was, like, August. And so what I was trying to think was, I want to play some college football bets, but I want to do futures because I never really – and I want to make it worth my while where I can cash my ticket, right? I'm not going to win, like, if I bet on Tua and I fly back and I win, like, $80, like, 4-1 or whatever. So I decided to place two bets, two ACC quarterbacks, Clemson and Miami, Kosi Perry, and Kelly Bryant. That was a waste of money. I think before September was over, I was like, well, these are worthless. I just tore them up, tossed them in the trash. I was like, there went $200. That was fun. So yeah, I mean, just a fun aside, but yeah, I mean, Clemson is Clemson at this point. I still think they're better. Again, just to run through the list, the worst, quote unquote, worst than FSU, but as John caveated, maybe not a guaranteed loss. Syracuse, Georgia Tech, Duke. We went with coin tosses for everyone from Boston College, Virginia Tech, North Carolina, Virginia, Louisville, and Pitt. Definitely better, all in agreement with Wake, NC State, Miami, and Clemson, though Brian wants to pull Virginia up there because he loves them.
One thing I want to point out, too, is we had talked about, I remember before last season, that we thought Florida State could be, again, it was to lose a little, right? We thought that they could be at least competitive with almost everybody except for Clemson. But what happened last year? Florida State was competitive with Clemson, right? They almost won that game, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Until kind of got away with
them. Probably should have. Yeah.
Right. Until it got away with them at the end. So I think, again, we could do worse than FSU, coin toss better. I think Florida State is capable of being competitive with and beating pretty much every team on their schedule, any team in the conference. I think Clemson's vulnerable. Yeah, well, that has to be an automatic loss right now. But there's a couple I don't feel great about. Like Wake always plays Florida State tough and seems to be tough. NC State, like you said, who knows? Anything can happen, a rivalry game with Miami. But every game is winnable. Every game can be competitive. So that's what I'm looking for at Florida State. And again, I think a bowl game is obviously the goal.
Yeah, and I think it's like we talked about at the beginning, where our expectations for this team, and it's you look at it, the defense is strong and or should be strong, and you've got Jordan Travis, which, again, gives you a puncher's chance in every single game he's there for.
Yep. I guess it's also what they'll do on the road, too, because I think one of their toughest games are going to be the one in NC State and the one at Hard Rock, even though no one's going to be at Hard Rock, but back me. Because the one at Clemson and Wake Forest, you have those games in the Doak. You have those games in Doak, and you have those teams who beat you last season and you want to get that win back. So I think those, even though they might be better teams, they're more winnable because that – I'm not going to say that NC State game is a lock, but that NC State game is – it just doesn't look good for FSU. Yeah. And the Miami game is a coin toss.
Yeah, and even though – like you said, even though they're better, you still have a chance. I think we just crossed the hour mark, but John, I do want to give you a chance because we did talk about it last week. The commissioner, ACC commissioner, was Jim Phillips. had his chance this week to talk conference realignment, and we kind of gave him the here's the easiest way out and here is the what you probably should do. And I don't think he took either way. It seemed like it was a disaster of we're going to sit pat and let it ride, right? It didn't really feel like he really brought it.
Right, pretty much. I mean, I have bias, obviously, as a Florida State fan. I want Florida State the best long-term, I guess, to secure their future long-term would be to leave the conference as soon as possible. So from that perspective, if I'm being honest, it was a little bit unfair to Jim Phillips. What is he supposed to say, right?
Yeah.
I tweeted before that, right, you know, that morning before the conference, the press conference started, that the ACC, in my opinion, is a dead conference walking. There's nothing. I mean, there's nothing. There's no solution there. You could talk about unequal revenue sharing, but all of the other programs aren't going to go for that, right? You're not going to give unequal shares to Clemson, Florida State, and Miami, and then have teams like North Carolina argue over that they should get an addition. It's just not going to happen. And because he knows he has the power that everyone's locked into the grant of rights through 2036, maybe you start to get to 2030, 2032, you get close enough within 3, 4, 5 years that someone will be able to sue by then to get out of it early. So you have another about 8 years, right? At least before you even have to worry about it. So, you know, you held all the cards, but as a Florida State fan, like you said, Brian, it's just not what you wanted to hear. It was pretty much a disaster. He kind of took a little bit of shots at Florida State a couple of different times. Talking about gated communities, all this other stuff. So it's just, to me, again, I think he was in an impossible no-win situation. Again, what was he supposed to say? Oh, yeah, we'll just let Florida State leave and Clemson and just nuke the whole conference and its value. But he knows he holds the key to the prison and he's not going to let it go because it's the only way that the conference survives. But at the same time, you're just delaying the inevitable. I think you make it more likely that the ACC collapses at some point. But then at the same time, I go back and forth on this. It's going to collapse anyway. I think I think it's a dead conference walking. There's no way to save it. You could try to combine the ACC in a merger and the Big 12 and the Pac 12, right, to try to act as a counterweight to the ACC, the Big 10. But by definition, we're talking about the ACC not existing anymore, right? Because you're combining three into one giant conference. There's no solution. There's nothing. So he's just going to sit on it for 8 years or 10 years. And then when it's gone, it's gone. So I don't think he had to take pot shots at Florida State like that. But at the same time, I would not expect anything different from a conference that has put the interests of smaller schools that have basketball at the forefront instead of football that brings in more money than anything else. And we can all kid ourselves about what this is really about, but it's really about money. And that's unfortunate, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
And that's where I sit with it.
Yeah. And I guess you talked about the pot shots and they were kind of like, he was alluding to, you know, schools trying to join the quote unquote gated communities. Like you mentioned, the Big Ten and the ACC were, you know, you got to come to the gate and see if they'll let you in. You know, he wants it to be open neighborhoods. We work as a big college football community, but that's just not where it is. And I think if you were a Florida State fan, you wanted to hear more progressive ideas, more progressive thoughts, more forward thinking, how to keep up with the change of college football. And listening to it, it felt like you said, what could he do? And honestly, it's probably unfair to him because the answer was probably a year or two ago.
Right.
Where he wasn't even the commissioner. But, you know, when you look at it, the opportunities to add good schools that could help seems to have shriveled up. You know, I mean, I think maybe the programs that made sense for you to add were something like UCF, Cincinnati, you know, stuff like that. Maybe a West Virginia, if you wanted to pull something like that, that helps add quality programs that add to your footprint if you're bringing in Cincinnati and West Virginia. And, you know, I don't think West Virginia is leaving the Big 12. Obviously, Cincinnati and UCF have already made their jumps to the Big 12. It just seems like those progressive opportunities have closed. And it's right. Like you said, it's a dead conference walking. And I think if you could have hoped, he's not going to come to the table and be like, well, we could save the day by joining forces with the Big 12. Because that's playing your hand on the table. But he didn't really allude, nothing he said gave you the idea that he had an ace up his sleeve. He had a plan. There was something to save the conference. And if you're Florida State, it seems like you're just kind of stuck until you feel confident that you can buy your way out.
Right. And I think overall, and again, a lot of this goes back to Swofford. And even when the ACC destroyed the Big East a long time ago, back, was it 2002 or three, when they absorbed Miami and Boston College and Virginia Tech, some other programs or whatever, they, I mean, the ACC was at the time the forefront. They were driving realignment in college football. And all of those seemed like, at the time, brilliant moves to secure the ACC's future as a football power. You know, Miami had just come off the national title, right? Virginia Tech was really good. Even after they joined the ACC, Virginia Tech had won 10 games. I think at least 10 games, like 8 straight seasons or something like that. They were really good for a long time. But so I think the history, or when we look back at the ACC, it'll be one of, yeah, every move at the time made sense, but maybe looking back, it wasn't ambitious enough. You know, maybe they should have tried to go after Texas or Oklahoma or something like that. So at the time, you can't criticize those moves, but in the end, it just ended up not being nearly enough. And at, like you said, at this point, I just don't see, there's no options left. There's no school that you can get that will save you from basically a super conference that is the SEC, the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Obviously the SEC has more talent. They're a better conference. They have more premier football programs. Like I saw someone on Twitter point out the SEC has like all these titles, and the Big Ten has one, right, with Ohio State, and that's it. So, but yet the Big Ten is still going to bring in $100 million a year per team. And that's what Florida State needs if they want to survive. Again, yeah, I think that's the story of the ACC, and I think it's already been written, and we're all just going to wait out the clock, I think is what's going to happen.
Yeah, it seemed like that was you kind of had the hope of how was this going to go, and I don't think you feel any more confident in how that went. You know, I felt like he didn't really give you the confidence you were looking for.
Right, no, and again, what could he say? But at the same time, if you're a football program, and this is all about money from football TV contracts, you wanted to hear something, have some kind of plan, even if it's all just hot air, say we're going to be ambitious and, you know what I mean, we're going to secure the future. And we didn't really, it just, there wasn't anything there.
Since the teams are so locked in, if I can ask you guys,
sure,
as knowledgeable football fans, as fans of Florida State, what do you think, we talked about Notre Dame before, but what do you think is the next step then, since we're all so locked into this?
It's going to be Notre Dame. I think everyone is sitting and waiting for Notre Dame to make their move. And I think eventually Notre Dame will take the Big 12s, the Big 10s money and go. That's my guess. It's either that or how it's going to end up going is Notre Dame is going to, and I forget when their deal with NBC comes up. Do you happen to know, John? I want to say 26.
Yeah, I think it's 26.
But they're going to go and they're going to shop their rights as an individual, as an independent, and see if they can get a number from, is it Amazon? Is it Apple? Is it Google? Is it, you know, one of these bajillion-dollar streaming services that is just going to outbid what they'd get if they joined the Big Ten? And if the money doesn't meet it, then they'll just go to the Big Ten. But that seems to be where we're at now, because I mean, the Pac-12 seems to be a handful of teams just kind of floundering. They might make a jump to the Big 12, but I don't think that's anything seismic that really changes the game. It seems like we've got two big conferences, and I don't see a move that allows you to catch up.
No, I mean, Notre Dame, I think Brian's right. Notre Dame did significantly increase the conference's revenue from whenever they joined in football. But people are criticizing the ACC for not holding Notre Dame's feet to the fire, making them join. But then you didn't really have any leverage. Notre Dame was never going to join the ACC fully.
Yeah.
And now I think at first I was like, okay, well, I've always thought that they'd be a better cultural fit with the Big Ten. And so if they were to join any conference, I'd see them joining them. But really what I think happened, because Max, in my opinion, where it's all going is that there's going to be a split, right? You're going to at least have another division of college football happen with the top programs. It could be 40 programs, it could be 60. But at the top are going to split away from the rest of the FBS and do their own division. Eventually, I think they're going to break away from the NCAA altogether, right? Whether they go straight away from the NCAA in one move or it's gradual where they split away in a new division and then leave, I don't know. But that's where I feel like it's going. And I think Notre Dame now, if they have to join a conference, they will. It'll probably be the Big Ten. I don't see why they would turn down a lot less money per year to join the ACC. Again, the ACC is going to figure something like $40 million a year per school, and the Big Ten is going to be about $100 million after they redo their TV contract. If the Notre Dame joins the ACC, maybe you get maybe bump it to 45, maybe. Maybe somebody, if you get another school somewhere somehow, maybe you can argue for 50 from ESPN, but you're just not going to, there's no options left to make up that gap.
And your deal's locked in for a long time. Notre Dame can get more money as an independent. They can get with you. So why would they agree to just give away more money?
If they were to go to any conference, it would be the Big Ten, in my opinion. But I think that they can afford, especially if they get the independent TV deal contract that they're right now shopping and marketing for. I think they want to do it. NBC/Fox thing or ESPN, where they're getting on their own $75 million a year, which I think their TV deal right now is like 30, 35. So they're asking for a giant raise in their own TV contract just to be independent. And if they're successful, I think that they're just going to ride it out until that split happens that we're talking about down the line. It could be 10 years from now. It could be 15 or 20 years, but it's going to happen. I think everyone, even all the administrators and presidents around college football, all believe, they all talk about every time they get together and they write all these articles with all these quotes from them, all saying that this is happening. So I think Notre Dame ideally wants to just sit pat, get their own independent deal, sit there until the split happens and then join. Whatever that looks like. But if they have to, they'll join the Big Ten. And I think if you're the ACC, again, your best bet is to try to get Notre Dame to join. I just don't see it happening. And if Notre Dame, in fact, does not join the ACC fully, then you're kind of screwed. Yeah. And these, again, right now, to get out with your own rights, your TV rights, I think it'll cost the school it's probably $300 to $500 million. And every year, though, that's going to go down. Every year you get closer to 2036, that value goes down. You can get closer and closer. I think when Maryland sued the ACC to get out of their rights to hop to the Big Ten, they ended up paying half of what they really owed. So even if you think you can do that, you still need minimum about $250, $300 million. Again, I just don't see any team trying to do that until closer to 2030.
So, but yeah, I mean, again, I think we're still years from that happening. And I think the one thing you take away from this past week from the commissioner's comments is you're kind of stuck until you feel comfortable writing that large of a check to make the jump. Because like you said, I think it seemed pretty clear the ACC isn't going to get it there. But I think that does it for this episode, man. I appreciate y'all listening. I know it was a little bit of a longer one, but I felt like we had a lot of good information. You guys got to hear how much I love Virginia, which is just wonderful. So I appreciate you guys listening. Thanks for joining us. For Brian, Max, and John, that's a wrap.